From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, special edition of Open Lines for the program. I'll tell you about that a little bit later on. Well, here we go. We've waited a long time. Election Tuesday. It's going to be our polls will open up in some areas pretty darn soon. Barack Obama radiated confidence, and John McCain displayed the grit of an underdog Monday as the presidential rivals reached for the finish line of a two-year marathon with burst of campaigning across battlegrounds from the Atlantic coast to Arizona. So here we go. And I've got to tell you, I'm looking forward to, one, the election so we can get it over with, as you are. And I'm also looking forward to the change. Both major candidates, I think, will be a refreshing change from the 8 years that we have had, which have been, in my lifetime, probably the 8 toughest years I can ever imagine. I was 13 years old when John F. Kennedy was assassinated, and that was really the first president I knew, truly didn't understand a lot, but that was number one. And we went through a lot during the 60s and the 70s and the 80s, and, as you know, the 90s. Seems like we go through a lot together all the time, don't we? But the last 8 years have been truly something else, and I'm just looking forward to the change. So good luck to the major candidates, to all of them, everybody who is running, and let's just see what happens. As a matter of fact, we will start our program early tomorrow at 9 p.m. Pacific time. For those stations who take the early feed or those stations that would like to start earlier, 9 p.m. Pacific time, a special edition of Coast to Coast AM with reporters all around the country and some analysis and insight into what is going on. We may have the results by then. We may not be. And then the full program begins at 10 o'clock Pacific time shortly thereafter. Philip Berg, the attorney who claims that Barack Obama did not have a real birth certificate, that he wasn't born in the United States. Well, he was unsuccessful today in the U.S. Supreme Court to try to stop the election. The U.S. Supreme Court basically did not even make a decision. I'm not even sure if they even looked at what he filed. So this word for Philip Berg, after so many court attempts, let it go, Philip. Just simply let it go. Barack Obama's grandmother, by the way, whose personality and bearing shaped much of the life of his life, has died. Obama announced Monday, one day before the election. Madeline Payne Dunham was 86 years old. Pregnant women should cut their caffeine intake and drink no more than 2 cups of coffee or 4 cups of tea a day, according to a government agency. The Food Standards Agency has lowered its recommended levels of the stimulant from a maximum of 300 milligrams a day to 200 milligrams, a reduction of a third. Children born with a low birth weight are more likely to suffer health problems like heart disease and diabetes. Dr. Dean Adell earned his MD from Cornell University. We syndicate him also around the world. Here he is. Add some insight into this story. Hey, Dr. Dean, how are you? Welcome back.
I'm doing fine, George. How are you doing? You a coffee drinker?
Now, you know what? No, but I am an iced tea drinker, and I'm told that there is caffeine in iced tea.
As a matter of fact, this study was done in England, and most of these women were tea drinkers, not coffee drinkers. And I'm not ready to draw the same conclusion that they're talking about. Because, first of all, anybody who uses no caffeine, they got to be a health nut. So your health habits are going to be different. You can't say it's the caffeine that caused a slight uptick in the low birth weight babies. They found like 13% of women are going to have a low birth weight baby. Big caffeine users had 15%. So it's not a big jump. I'm not telling women to go out and drink 5 cups of Starbucks every day, but I find there's a lot of fear that gets inflicted by reports like these that are really kind of premature. So I would just take it in stride at this particular point.
And I also see studies, Dean, where some say caffeine is good for you. It's good. If you have migraines, it might help you.
Oh, you're absolutely right. I could sit here. We could spend the whole evening on the diseases that coffee is thought to help. It decreases depression, decreases gallbladder disease, decreases colon cancer, kidney cancer. The list goes on and on and on. And it always seems that someone's out there trying to prove that the things we enjoy doing are horrible for us. And we've had to backpedal a lot. You know, once upon a time, alcohol was the devil's brew, and it turns out little to moderate is okay for you. Matter of fact, it's pretty good for you. So I'm a coffee drinker. You know, I have to admit my ties to the industry up front. And, of course, we need to protect, of course, babies when they're in the womb. But I don't think most obstetricians in America would tell women they can't have a cup of coffee a day or tea. And, you know, you got a really, really strong tea, and that's probably has as much caffeine as a really, really, really weak cup of coffee. So I guess the fact it was done mostly in tea drinkers doesn't mean it's invalid. But the only way you can prove this, if you really wanted to go for it, is take a bunch of women, get them pregnant, give half of them decaf, and give half of them regular caffeine.
Oh, what a horrible study.
And then you'd measure it. But that's real science. And the truth is, there was, once upon a time, they did this a few years ago in Denmark, and they found no difference in birth weights. But the study was criticized because the women were kind of already pregnant when they started it. So if caffeine has an influence in the first few weeks or month or so of pregnancy, then that study wouldn't have picked it up. So that's the truth as I can get close to it.
Thanks, Dean. You want to learn more about Dr. Dean, his website, healthcentral.com. Bones found last week near where Stephen Fawcett's plane crashed in eastern California, Sierra Nevadas, are those of the adventurer. Testing at California State Crime Lab determined that two large bones recovered matched Fawcett's DNA. Fawcett was the first person to circle the globe solo in a balloon in 2002 and the first to fly a plane around the world solo without refueling 3 years later. He also set world records in round-the-world sailing and cross-country skiing. He was an adventurer. He made his money in the financial sector, but became well-renowned for his daredevil exploits. And he took a small little plane and September 3rd of 2007 took off from the Flying M Ranch outside of Minden, Nevada. He was scouting locations for an attempt to break the land speed record in a rocket-propelled car. He never came back. General Motors, October, U.S. sales plunged 45% and Ford's dropped 30% as low consumer confidence and tight credit combined to scare customers away from the showrooms. The results were released on Monday, along with a 23% drop at Toyota and a 25% decline at Honda. Strong indications that sales for the industry as a whole may perhaps be the worst in 25 years. Will this get any better? Will a new president be able to fix things? In a moment, Ms. Shedlock joins us. We'll get his take on all this in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Ms. Shedlock, registered investment advisor. He's a representative for Sitka Pacific Capital Management. We get his advice on a lot of these financial matters. Here he is. Mish, how are you?
I'm fine, but man, what grim news. You in the auto industry today.
Oh, huge.
It's just amazing, and the numbers just keep getting worse and worse. Let's just do a quick recap. 45% decline, GM, 30% decline in sales at Ford, 23% at Toyota, 25% at Honda, 33% at Nissan. Amazing. And now,
and gasoline is now at a low level.
Gasoline is way down, and but it's a sign that the fact that gasoline prices have collapsed is a sign of a slowing global economy. Now, I don't have it up there, but I'll have it up on my blog tomorrow at Mish's Global Economic Analysis. Do a Google search for Mish. 9 out of the 10 top countries in the world are in a state of contraction. 9 out of 10 are in recession. We're going to have a global recession, something that happens only once or twice every few decades, and we're in it right now. Things are bad, and they're going to get worse.
We see American Express planning to lay off 7,000 people. So, Mish, we really haven't seen the effect of this yet. But once all these people start to lose their jobs, and then the economy slows even more, doesn't it?
Oh, exactly. And GM and Chrysler are in a merger. That merger is going to cost 74,000 jobs. Now, the thing is, those jobs are going away because if they don't do this merger, Chrysler is going to go bankrupt. And in fact, GM and Ford are struggling with bankruptcy right now if the government doesn't bail them out.
And I would guess Ford will have to find a merger partner soon, too, don't you?
Ford will need a merger partner, exactly. But who's strong enough to do it? And who needs the capacity? I don't think we need it. The reason why auto sales were brisk the last few years was because we had the same subprime lending just like we did in the housing market. And anyone that could breathe could go out and buy a car. And now we're seeing the reverse of that. GMAC on October 30th announced that they are going to stop financing for their
people under, and also people under a certain credit score, wasn't it?
Yes, under a certain credit score, and it was a high credit score.
700, I remember.
Yeah, and there's 6,500 dealers. I think we're going to see 5,000 dealers go bankrupt. That is a lot of car dealers. Now, think about, you know, all of those. The ISM report came out today. That's the Institute Supply Manufacturing Index.
All right.
It is at a lowest level since 1980. The production measure fell to 34. Anything under 50 is in contraction. So it's a diffusion index. Anything above 50 is expansion. Anything below 50 is contraction. And the gauge for new orders fell to 32.2, the lowest level since 1980. The production measure fell to 34.1 from 40.8. And this is interesting here. Index of prices paid dropped to 37 from 53.5. Price of copper is plunging. Price of aluminum is plunging. Price of gasoline, natural gas, all plunging. That's a sign of weakening demand. Consumers are tapped out, and it's going to get worse. You talked about the layoffs. I'm looking. We're going to have a jobs report on Thursday. It is going to be another disaster. I said in December of last year that every jobs report this year in 2008 would be a disaster. We have 9 for 9 right now, and the October numbers will be coming out, and it's going to be 10 for 10. This is going to be a miserable report. Look at the retailers. Retail sales, Christmas sales are down. They're going to have to be laying off, firing people after the holidays. It's just grim news everywhere, George.
Yeah, it is. As a matter of fact, a major, major automobile retailer in the St. Louis area laid off 15 of their salespeople. And this is a heavy hitter dealership. 15 people just a couple days ago.
Right. All over. The largest GM dealer in the country, this guy had 15... I think it was 15
dealerships.
Dealerships, yes, yeah. Went bankrupt. That was just a few weeks ago. Incredible.
All right. So sometime in mid-January, either Barack Obama or John McCain will be handed the keys to the White House.
All right.
What are they going to do about it? How can they fix this? This is deep. This is a problem. This is going to take a long, long time.
Now, I gave my recommendation, and what I said that they ought to do is pull the troops out of Iraq, and instead of doing these bank bailouts, we ought to talk about that for a second, but let me just finish this train of thought.
Right. Well, you're with me for the hour, by the way.
Bring the troops back home and rebuild our infrastructure. We've got a energy grid that's aging. We've got roads and bridges that need fixing. And if we wanted to do something positive, I would rather spend the money where at least we get something out of it rather than dropping bombs in Iraq where we get nothing out of it, or bailing out failed industries that don't need a bailout. But the thing that irks me the most, they passed this bailout package. Now, I knew it was a boondoggle from the very beginning. I fought this thing. We talked about it. It passed anyway. $700 billion, of which they've already managed to spend almost half of that. It was in pieces, $350 billion in the first half. And they gave $125 billion to 9 banks to recapitalize them. Guess what, George? The bonus pool for Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, and Merrill Lynch, $20 billion. $20 billion.
That was their fees?
That's the bonus pool. Not the employee. Yes! People ought to be outraged. Goldman's current compensation pool is amounts to $564,000 per employee. This is where taxpayer money is going. $20 billion to just those three corporations. I don't have the numbers for Citigroup or some of the others, the banks that got this money. Some of it wouldn't disclose. Citigroup wouldn't disclose how it was giving out its bonuses. But this is an outrage. Taxpayers ought to be screaming bloody murder over this. Absolutely amazing.
Well, I think Mission, one way they're doing it, they're getting rid of the old, and they're going to vote someone in. And, you know, as I said at the top of the hour, you know, at this point, I want Obama or McCain in. I want this administration out. We've had 8 years of it. They have failed us. They failed us miserably. And, you know, 72% of the American public believe it staunchly, and I believe the other 28% are beginning to believe it now. We need a change. And you know, at this point, I'll give the elected party the benefit of the doubt to see if they can help fix this. But what we've had to date is absolutely unacceptable.
It's criminal. It is absolutely criminal, some of the things that have done. Not only have we managed the country economically into the ground, we've managed to lose our freedoms, you know, with all the wiretapping, you know, the homeland security, everyone prying into everything is done. And in spite of all of that, we've still had scandal after scandal in Wall Street with Enron-type things. Once a week, you just look at the news. There's another AIG insurance company blowing up. All of this, yes, it's definitely time for a change. We're going to get a change. I'm actually confident, quite confident, that Obama is going to win. I think it's going to be a blowout, George. I really do.
Well, you know, it's either going to be a blowout or it's going to be an upset, and McCain's going to win. That's the way it's going to go, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, by all indications, Obama should win, but you never know what's going to happen.
Stranger things happened before, like the Florida election that was called.
Well, yeah, I don't think we're going to have to worry too much about that. I think the biggest problem will be technical mistakes with these voting machines. I mean, they are not fail-safe. There's always fraud, Mish, during every election. There has been since the beginning of time.
And there always will be.
Yeah. And there always will be. But I don't think we're going to have the blatant stuff that went on in 2000. But be that as it may, I still can't tell you who I think is going to win at this point, because, you know, as you just said, strange things happen. There's still a heavy undecided vote there, and, you know, you just never know. But, again, the bottom line is, I'm glad we've got change coming, don't you?
Oh, absolutely. There is going to be change. We certainly need change, a different course of direction. And I can sit back, and so could you, criticize either of these candidates. But I think Obama stands to be a healer if he wins. And I'm hoping, since I think he's going to win, I hope he gears more towards the center than the way he sounds. And I guess we could say the same thing about McCain. Whoever wins, I hope it's not a radical approach one way or another. We need to come to the center. We need a healing process, not just in the United States, but with all our economic partners, trading partners, with Europe. We need to heal this. We need to stop wasting money in overseas. We need to look inward, rebuild our infrastructure, rebuild our electric grid, do something about an energy policy that is absolutely horrendous, and get on. But
take care of our own people.
Yeah.
You know, I look, I'm the first to say you got to feed the world as well as you can. But you know what? You know, you know what it's like to have a family. You got to take care of your family first, and then once you take care of your family, you do what you can for everybody else.
Right.
We're not taking care of our family in this country right now.
No, we're not. And we just gave loans. We you know, guaranteed loans. I talked about this the last time I was on, to, you know, all these foreign countries at a time, and we've got an AIDS policy where we're funneling money to Africa while we're closing AIDS research here in the United States. None of this makes any sense.
Mitch, we're going to take phone calls with you when we come right back. Our special guest this hour, Mitch Shedlock, and then next hour, 3 hours of pre-election night open lines right here on Coast to Coast AM. Now, though there's a national election going on Tuesday, there's a big one going on in Cleveland. So all you have to do is go to WTAM.com. That's our affiliate there, WTAM.com. Click the big vote, scroll down, and you will see three candidates dueling it out. And they're closing in on me, and we can't have that. We're ahead right now, but we need your help. So just go and vote and click away as much as you want, I guess. Every couple of minutes, they say. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Mitch, at what point do you think things will open up again? You know, life is a cycle, ups and downs, and this is a down. When does it go back up again?
I don't think it does for a while. And unfortunately, well, there's actually two ways to look at that. One of them is good, and one of them is bad. The good side of things is we need to get away from the consumption binge that we're in, and we're going to have to. The U.S. can no longer spend beyond its means, and so, you know, that's a rude awakening. But that's a good thing, though, because people are going to have to start saving. Certainly our children now are going to have an education. The bad side is, you know, look at the children growing up in families right now where the parents are fighting over money. They're going to see that, and they're not going to want to do the same thing. They're going to have a different attitude towards debt than some of their parents did, who are now about to lose their homes in foreclosure or lose their cars repossessed or boats. So a much more healthier attitude towards debt, I think, we're going to see from our nation's youth. But the bad side is boomers are heading into retirement. They've lost a lot on their houses. They thought that their house was going to be their retirement, and now the stock market is heading down. So it's going to be bad. We're going to see boomers competing with their children and grandkids, actually, for jobs at Walmart and you know, just to maintain some income during retirement years.
So you see this for what, at least a couple of years?
I see this for a decade.
We're having truly a decade.
Yes, George. We're having a secular shift. This is not a cyclical thing we're talking about here. We're having, and this is what Wall Street doesn't get, and this is what the people that think that the stock market's going to bounce right back. Look at what happened in Japan. The stock market over there is still 70% below where it was 19 years ago.
Yeah.
Now, I don't think the U.S. does exactly that bad. There's differences certainly between the United States and Japan, but a lot of the things that are now forced to go away. A lot of the money was made was just on speculation, on leverage. Lehman was leveraged 40 to 1. Bear Stearns was leveraged 40 to 1. They're now under the control of the Fed, where leverage at banks is going to be reduced 10 to 1. Well, that reduced leverage is a good thing because it reduces risk, but it also is going to reduce the profit potential. So earnings aren't coming back. I see unemployment rising to 10% probably over the next 2 years. And the recovery out of that is going to be weak because we have the retiring boomers that are going to be trying to save, not spend. They counted on their house, then they counted on Wall Street, and both of those let them down. So, and they're going to need to tap whatever savings they do have to get by in retirement. So it's really not a pretty picture.
Let's go to Baltimore, Maryland. Susan, east of the Rockies. Why don't you get us started, Susan? Go ahead.
Well, I just don't know where to begin. Your guest, I'm sorry, I don't know his name.
Mish. Just call him Mish.
Mish, okay. He thought Obama would be a healer. I don't think so. From what, I mean, this man, his only friends have been the Marxist terrorists. You know, that's his only friends. He doesn't have one friend that's, you know, just a businessman or anything like that.
Oh, he does have friends who are businessmen, too.
No.
Let's, you want comments? We got open lines coming up next hour.
Let's pass on that one.
This hour, you got Mish as the guest. Let's go to you, Pam, in Texas, first-time caller. You're on the air. Hey, Pam.
Is it me?
It is. If me is your name, that's you.
Hello, Pam.
My name is Pam. And Mish, I just really support a lot of what you're saying. Yeah, last night, I believe, Mr. Norrie George, you had a guest on that kind of made some kind of bad comments about Obama. And I was just wondering, you know, because I've only voted once before. I'm 46 years old. I've just never voted for anybody but Bill Clinton. And I just wanted to know, where do these people come up with this socialism when Sarah Palin alone did it within her own state of Alaska when she took, what was it, the money that ExxonMobil made, and they got like a benefit from it, and like almost got 600,000 people, you know, for every man, woman, and child. They got like $3,200 benefit of, you know, off of the profits of ExxonMobil or the major oil company there. I'm really not sure the name, but I was just really concerned, you know, about why people say these things, because I really feel in my heart that this man has got something that God has given us. I mean, everything in this world happens for a reason, and I just was
all right,
wondering.
Penny, is there a question here?
Yeah, my question is why is there so much question about who he is? Why?
All right, Mish, I'm not sure you're going to be able to handle
it. No, I would prefer to stay away from these types of questions. I will say, you know, the one person before, though, did mischaracterize me. I'm actually not voting for either McCain or Obama, although I just said Obama would win. I'm actually voting for Ron Paul. He's fiscally conservative. That's the direction I think the country needs to go in, away from the types of bailouts we've seen. I merely commented that Obama is going to win. But I was
Ron Paul's been on the show twice because he wanted to talk to American people face to face. He's taken, he's been a good guy. He's taken a lot. I like him. Let's go, Bob in Los Angeles. You're on the air with us. Hey, Bob, go ahead.
Hey, let's change it a little bit. Go back to the topic here.
You got it.
Anyway, your guest is great. He puts things together. You could add one together and come up with two. So, thing is, I've been on Art Bell's show three times. I mean, as a caller, basically. And I told Art Bell once, and he didn't believe me. And then I called back again, and he didn't believe me. The third time, he went, you know what? There's something going on here. I see a pattern. I go, yeah, it took you three times, Art. But I told Art, every time we get up to an election, what happens is oil mysteriously drops 50 cents a gallon. And then I told him, at the 2008 election, you'll see it around $2 drop, and it'll return to $2. And Art Bell goes to me, he said, no, that would be completely obvious that the White House was controlling the oil and that it would be a conspiracy. I said, you know what, Art? There's been lies telling you why it was going up. There's shortage, and they'll still tell you a lie while it's going down, and people still believe it. So there's a definite connection between Dick Cheney running he has a war room, he calls it, where they run the stuff. He's called the magic man in a room, and it's so funny that he was caught. He had a bunch of paperwork with the head with Enron and ExxonMobil. He lit it on fire because he doesn't believe in shredders, and he almost caught the White House on fire. You can look it up. He started a fire in the White House. They had to put it out because it burned all the documents. But anyway, as you see right now, because I predict this, I'm not a super psychic. We're down right now. California is $2.49 a gallon at this point. Now I know from I've been around three presidents of the United States. I worked at a fixed base operation where we had to take care of aircraft for ex presidents and current presidents. So I had a lot of talk with Secret Service and stuff. So I know what goes on in the White House for each administration. Now what's going on right here with the deck? Democratic Party, if you look at them, if Obama gets in, and what's going to happen, the stock market obviously will start recovering immediately, because I deal with people, you know, people in the stock market, they know if Obama goes in, stock market up, oil down, gold down. If we get Mr. McCain in, we've got the oil's going to jump back up again, stock market's going to stabilize, and then we're going to have a little problem. But number one here, it's strange. If you look at the economy, the oil prices, it's sort of obvious what's going on here. Now, number one, I was told that it's obvious. It's somebody.
Bobby, I need a question here.
Okay, sorry about that. Sorry about just rambling on here. Yeah, what do you think about the coincidence between every time we have an election, and we're right now with the Bush administration is leaving, and all these oil shortages just came to an abrupt end, and we're down $2.30 a gallon.
I think it's easily explained here. I think the global economy is weakening. I mean, you know, to an extent, I mean, the government can do some things, you know, like stop flying sorties. We waste a lot of oil, you know, flying missions, moving boats around. You know, they can cut back on those kinds of things, but to think that the government can actually manipulate the price of oil and hold it there over the long term, even have any kind of significant effect, you know, we're talking about oil prices here that dropped from over 140 all the way down to 63 is where they're sitting right now. The government didn't do that. A slowing global economy did that. There's absolutely no question about that. And I talked about that earlier with George. 9 out of 10 countries, the top 10 countries in the world in terms of GDP, are in recession now. That's why the price of oil is down, not anything the government did. I'm sorry.
All right, Bill in Gainesville, Florida. You're up with us, Bill. Go ahead. You're with Mish.
Hey, George and Mish, how you doing?
I'm doing fine.
I kind of like what you're talking about, the economy. I'm about George's age, and my parents, they passed away in the last 5 years. You know, they didn't have much. They didn't have anything to do with the stock market. They had savings bonds. They had a house. They had a cottage. That, you know, they owned everything. They paid their bills on time, so on and so forth. And I think that when the subprime thing came around back in the late 90s, that got us into a lot of trouble. And I think the politicians did that to get votes. And the guys did by saying we tried to help everyone. And before you knew it, the thousands, hundreds of thousands of people had houses that they couldn't afford, that my parents would have never taken a loan out, that they knew that, you know, somehow down the road the rates were going to go up and so on. And so they would have never taken that type of a chance. They were just made that way. Everything they owned, everything they paid for, everything they worked hard for. And I'm afraid that the people are in for a rude awakening, and that is that you can't just take free money, because someday you're going to have to pay that free money back.
Well, that's what happens. That's what happens in deflation here. The people borrowed money, and banks lent money, and people can't pay it back because the assets on which that's backing up that debt have collapsed. We're seeing it not just in housing. We're seeing it in commercial real estate. We're seeing it in strip malls. We're seeing there's overcapacity everywhere. And the amazing thing is, we've got Congress here, you know, that gave this money to banks, essentially for the banks to lend. But they don't want to lend it, and I don't blame them, because we have rampant overcapacity everywhere. Yet we have got Barney Frank saying, well, we gave you this money to lend, but the banks are just sitting on it. But they need to sit on it, because we've got rising unemployment. We've got credit card debt that's going to start defaulting massively when people are thrown out of work. So the last thing we actually need to do is spend money recklessly. Spending money recklessly got us into this mess, and yet Congress is trying to force more reckless spending. It doesn't make any sense.
Mitch, I know a couple in Las Vegas. They own 3 homes, okay, in a couple different cities, and they are now paying their mortgages with their credit cards. That's a disaster.
That is a disaster. They need to talk to a bankruptcy attorney right now. They're getting themselves deeper and deeper in debt for no reason. Those homes are shot. Those home prices aren't coming back. And it's time for people to realize what they're facing and stop dreaming. When you start supporting consumption off of credit cards and paying your mortgage off of credit cards, you need to do something. And you know, I recommend people, you know, talk to a bankruptcy specialist, because that's what we're talking about here. Unfortunately, that
and you know what's interesting though? They cleaned up the bankruptcy laws before the debacle hit. It's almost as if they knew.
They passed the Bankruptcy Reform Act of 2005,
uh-huh,
which tightened all of these things. Now, the interesting thing now is we're seeing banks voluntarily offering to reduce by up to as much as 40% of the credit card balances on people. They're scared to death that when Obama
But what does that do to your credit score?
He's my guess is it would probably make it go up. These people right now are in default. So the banks are coming out and saying, if you start paying back your credit card bill, we'll reduce the balance by 40%. What they're scared of is Obama coming in with the Democratic Congress. They're going to completely rewrite the bankruptcy laws again. I think it's going to happen. People are going to go bankrupt, and they're going to default on all of those balances. So now we're seeing, for the first time, we're seeing banks a little bit worried about what they've done and about that money that they've lent out on credit cards that's not coming back. It's really quite amazing.
Next up, Nick in Nebraska. Hey, Nick, take it away.
Good evening, gentlemen. I think maybe you have answered the question from the last caller, but somewhere in the news recently, within last month, I heard on a talk show the comment that the government would have been cheaper and gotten money into the economy more quickly if they simply would have given every citizen $1 million. There's probably a hole in that somewhere, but I'd like your guest to comment on that.
I think the number is actually, I've seen that number floating around, and it's based on faulty math. But the problem you have to remember is there's too much spending already. So simply saying, okay, we're going to give people $2,000 or $3,000, whatever the amount was, because that's what it really is. It's not $1 million. There's no way they could give 200 million people $1 million to spend. But let's assume they go out and spend that. We already went down that path once. They passed the $150 billion stimulus package one. Consumers went out there and spent the money. Now what? You can't keep giving away free money forever, and that's the only way that people are going to spend, because they're broke, they don't have a job. Unless you can do something about jobs and people being underwater and behind on their mortgage payments, just giving them more money to spend is just a one-time fix that's just going to waste. It's robbing the people who are productive, taking money from the taxpayers that have savings and giving it to people just to support their current consumption. The plan is fatally flawed.
Atlanta, Georgia, we go. Hello, Kelly. You're on the air with us.
Hey, guys. I think you're both doing such a great service, so thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Mish, can you explain what has happened to gold prices, and do you see gold rebounding significantly anytime soon, say within the next 12 months, 18 months, et cetera?
That's an interesting question, and thank you for asking that. We're seeing a lot of conspiracy theories out there saying, people are telling me and all over the internet that there's this shortage of gold out there, that you can't buy gold. Well, there's actually not a shortage of either gold or silver. What there is a shortage of is various retail forms of gold and silver, namely gold coins, silver coins, and small bars that the average consumer buys. And the reason why we're seeing shortages there is the price of gold has been falling. So we have all of these small bullion dealers, all these small coin dealers who they're quite comfortable holding gold coins as long as the price of gold is rising or the price of silver is rising. But once the price of gold and silver starts falling, they're underwater on their inventory. They don't want to sell that inventory for a loss. So all of a sudden you see these shortages. It's natural to have shortages in this kind of environment. So when you hear people say that there's a shortage of gold and silver, no, there's not. It's a shortage of retail forms of it. Now, as to where the price of gold and silver is going, well, a lot of this is going to depend on what the U.S. government does, how recklessly we keep spending. If they keep throwing money at problems, I think a lot of that money is going to go into gold. And gold to me is a currency. It's not a commodity. Something only 0.1% of gold actually makes itself into industrial components. Gold's primary role is actually as money. And if the Fed keeps cheapening the U.S. dollar, the price of gold is bound to come up. I don't want to put a timeline on it.
Mish, my friend, keep in touch. And we'll see what happens tomorrow. I'll be back with Open Lines on Coast to Coast AM.